Pop quiz. What do Steph Curry, Nick Offerman, Rob Lowe, Jimmy Butler, and Patrick Mahomes have in common? They've all been interviewed by my guest this week, Clay Skipper, writer for GQ, Esquire, multiple other publications. He's even ended up in the basement of a star NFL quarterback's mom's house. We'll talk about that. We go through how he spends his day. How do you even get these people on the phone? How do you come up with the interview questions? And when you're sitting across from them, how do you get to the core of who these public figures really are? This is the inaugural episode of Colby Howard Wants Your Job. You and I, we're learning together. Let's dive in. Hello, friends, and welcome to Colby Howard Wants Your Job, the show where we find out what the heck everyone else does with their day. As always, I'm your host, Colby Howard. This week, we have my dear friend, Clay Skipper, former writer at GQ Magazine, now a freelance writer. Clay Skipper, welcome to the podcast. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
How do you think about the extremely self-promotional title?
What was your second option?
There was a second option. Do you want to? We can spitball ideas right now.
That was plan A.
No, the whole point is to ask way too many questions about what other people do.
Okay.
And we've had this conversation obliquely a couple times.
Yeah.
But never exactly what it is you do. So to start out, you don't have a LinkedIn profile. Talk to me about that.
I do now. It's not fleshed out though. No, I have one. You didn't look very hard. You'd be a bad journalist. I have one. I don't have a picture, but I do have a LinkedIn profile.
What's the reason for not having one in the first place? Writers don't need them?
The work is your LinkedIn, right? Like, if someone reads a story you wrote for GQ or New York Times or whatever, and they like it, they'll reach out to you based on that story.
So do you have a website?
No, but I should. That is like where I should have a website.
So when someone
I am
Googles
paying
you.
For clayskipper.com, but I'm not currently using it. So if you're out there and you're trying to get clayskipper.com, you're not going to get it. But no, that is what most people do. Most people have like a colbyhoward.com and it's like, here's all the work I've done. Because that is way more useful than LinkedIn if you're trying to stay in a similar job. But I don't know, because I was let go from GQ and I've not been approached by anybody else. So I may not be the right person.
Yeah,
exactly. I may not be the right person to weigh in on this.
All right. So when you were at GQ, obviously we've seen the outcome. I see an article. It's your interview with a celebrity, be it an actor, be it an athlete. How do you actually end up in that conversation? Is it your idea?
Mm-hmm.
Is it they reach out to GQ, they're published? Like, how did you actually end up in that conversation?
It's a mix. So there are a couple ways it could work. Sometimes it comes from them, but I'd say that's rare. GQ wants to put in people who feel like relevant, I guess, in the culture. But if there's a young person in the NBA who's either blowing up because they're really good, or they're blowing up because they're maybe not as good at basketball, but they're really like stylish in the case of GQ, then we're kind of like, okay, that's a person we should include in GQ in some way or shape or form. Could be in the magazine, could be on .com.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go out to that person's rep agent. Maybe we'd go through, you could go through the team rep. Every team has like a media relations person. You could find their individual agent.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have like another rep on top of that. It's like a business rep. And you go to them and you reach out to them. You say, hey, we want to do, and it could be anything. It could
who's we though?
GQ also has people who are talent bookers. And their specific job is to get talent. So I could go to them and be like, hey, I want to interview Russell Westbrook. Could you help us reach out to them? If it's something for the website, which, then that was something I might do on my own. If it was like, if you're trying to get someone huge, like LeBron James or Kevin Durant, like that's going to go through a talent booker. But if I'm just reaching out to like the hot new rookie, I might just do that directly because it's just, there's less negotiation that needs to happen.
And are you, in terms of, and maybe this, again, this could be, if you're doing LeBron, it's different than, I don't know, someone who might be the top five pick in the draft. But are you making the decision? You're in a meeting and you're pitching, I want to talk to this guy. Is it coming from the top saying, hey, Clay, we want you to interview? Yeah. How does that work?
So that happens a few different ways. I can come up with an idea and just send an email to my editor back in the day. In the old days, when you were actually in an office, you could just walk up to them. There would be ideas meetings where it's like, we are going to meet for, you know, X amount of time. We're going to throw out a bunch of ideas. Sometimes in those meetings, we would settle on, hey, we think LeBron is a good fit for the October issue. And then they would be like, we need to assign a writer to that. So that would come like top down. So it totally depends. It can come bottom up if I'm just like watching an NBA game one night and I'm like, who's this guy? He's had three good games in a row. And that night or the next day in the office, I can go out to my editor and be like, hey, we should get this person involved. Or it could be, we should really cover Jimmy Butler. He's had insane playoffs. Mm-hmm. Next time the season rolls around, next August or September, we should put him in the magazine. Let's start those conversations now.
Gotcha. And how do they come up with, it's Clay's time to get a cover story? Hmm. Or this guy's had five cover stories in the past. We're going to always give him the LeBron James or the Matt Damon or something. How do you think they view who they select to do some of the bigger stories?
I think it's just it's a matter of who they think would be a good fit. Like, I think they look at the writer's ability. Like, have they written enough of these stories to be able to mm-hmm. do one of these stories? What are the topics they usually cover? Like, if we were going to put AOC in the magazine, they're not like, I'm not a politics guy. They're not going to send me to do that story, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's a matter of like, okay, we have this story. What do we think it's going to be about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing like Pharrell, it's mm-hmm. probably going to be a lot of, there's going to be conversations about like style, fashion, masculinity, skincare routine. So it's like, is this like that's not really, like masculinity is something I've covered before, but like not so much style, skincare. So it's like, is this something he's comfortable with? He has a natural literacy with, like, so it's just a matter of being like, who is the person? What is the topic? And who do we think would mm-hmm. be like a good fit for that?
When you said, can they do it? So they've done it enough times to that they think you could do it. What would be an example of someone not being able to do it and like failing?
Well, I think it's just a matter of like, for instance, the cover story is like the marquee story, right? So mm-hmm. that's the story that's going to get the most social push. That's the thing that's going to be promoted the most. That's the thing that's like sort of the face of the magazine for that month. So they just want to make sure that it's someone who has had experience doing it, so they feel like it can do a good job. So you're not going to take someone who's, you know, brand new to magazine mm-hmm. writing and put them on that story because it's just a bit of a different beast.
Well, what do you think a bad job is? And what do you think a good job is?
Well, the amazing thing at working in a place like GQ is that your floor for failure is so high because you're so protected from like the ecosystem that you live in. That was one thing that I always took solace in, was like, my editors are so good and the access is so good mm-hmm. and you could really mess it up, but you have people who are going to protect you from making it really bad.
Like, what is an example? Is a bad article in your, and maybe if the floor is high, then bad is relative. Is it nothing interesting? Like, it was just
yeah, it's just like boring
article?
To read. Boring to read. Like, didn't get any new insight into who they were, or why they matter. I think like a good barometer. You need to explain why this person matters, why mm-hmm. they're interesting. Like, that's just like table stakes for why we're talking about the person. And then you need to like get them to offer some interesting insight into their backstory. Say something they haven't said before, tell a story they haven't told before, get introspective in a way they haven't before, and like sort of move the conversation ahead that person. So it's like, again, like Jimmy Butler, it's like if we did a story on him, like there's a lot of things that are already known about Jimmy Butler. He's been written about a lot. He's been covered about a lot. Can you write a story in a way that people reading it are going to be like, I already knew who Jimmy Butler was, but I went to the story and I came out with a totally refreshed perspective. I learned all these new things about him. And like, yes, the unique thing about our job or at a place like GQ is you get really good access. So if you read, like, a lot of places aren't going to get extended sit-down time with Jimmy Butler.
What's extended in this case? What's usual and what's extended?
I would say extended is anything like nowadays, it's probably like between 2 to 4 or 5 hours.
Is that broken up or is that usually straight through?
So usually we would always ask for 2 2-hour sit-downs for like a feature-length story. Or not necessarily sit-downs, but 2 2-hour sessions.
Is that what you did with Butler in Philadelphia? Didn't you go to his house?
No, but that was a little different because that was like an online story. That was like, I think we spent like 90 minutes.
Gotcha.
But a lot of places now will get like 15 minutes. It's like you get 15 minutes after the game. And it's like, and he's like, we're putting him on the cover. And it's like, what? I mean, it doesn't happen in GQ.
Right.
But I say that because, or it may be happening now. I don't know. I don't work there anymore. But like I say that because if you have extended access to somebody, and someone reads the story, like that's your competitive advantage. Like your competitive advantage is you're getting access to this person that a lot of people are interested in but don't have access to. So if you come away from that story not feeling like you learned anything new about that person, mm-hmm. then like you've kind of failed because you're getting to go behind the curtain. That's the whole reason you're there.
is there a little bit of like a, so Joe Rogan has like a 4-hour podcast.
Yeah.
And so of course you've got like four-minute clips that are extremely watchable.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't think anyone listens to the full 3.5 hours. Like that's insanity.
Yeah.
But you get very...
I think you're wrong. I think a lot of people probably watch all 3.5 hours. I know.
That's an insane amount of time. But like what you can... there's something headlinable usually in there. So is part of the advantage, if I spend 6 hours with LeBron James, I'm going to learn something, or I'm going to wear him to hour six. This dude's going to be so tired. He's going to say something that's different than he said before. Is there a little bit of that?
A little bit. But it's also just you're like... The thing, the way that comparison maybe doesn't track is like, if you're on Joe Rogan's podcast, the guest is coming to Joe Rogan's world and they're doing this. They're sitting at mics and they're like talking. When you're spending time with a profile subject, like you're getting, hopefully, if it's arranged in an ideal way, you're getting access to that person's world. So it's not just what they say. It's also like you're getting to observe them in an environment where almost nobody else gets to observe them. So it's not just what they say. And in fact, a lot of times when you're trying to like, write a profile of someone, it's like people are good at, like, especially people who are like really successful, they're good at hiding behind a sort of platitudinous curtain, right? And so you are
great word.
Thank you. I was a writer at one point. And so you are getting, you want to observe that person and you're trying to take what they say and what they do and translate it to try to decide what does it mean? How does it fit into some sort of larger narrative about them? So it's not always necessarily what they say. It's just like, observing them and being around them and getting a sense of who they are and trying to convey that authentically to the audience.
Got it. This is the whole Gay Talese, Frank Sinatra has a cold.
Yeah.
How do you look around their world and come up with a narrative even if you never get to talk to them? In this case, you are talking to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in that case, for some reason...
That's called a write around.
What, when you just can't get access?
When you can't get access, and you still write a story. Yeah. Very hard to do a good write around, but like when people do them, there's...
Well, it's almost like an unauthorized biography.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. But are you in the world, like there's just so much video, I keep forgetting. Let's say you go into someone's world. You're hanging out with Jimmy Butler for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Are you recording it audio? Mm-hmm. Are you recording video? Are you just writing notes? How does that work?
For me, also, I want to be clear that like I wasn't writing like a ton of cover stories. I don't want to like
make it.
You were
writing articles.
I just don't want to like pass it off here as if I was like one of the...
To make you seem better.
Yes. I was
as
like,
good or better than you actually are.
I was deep in the bullpen. I was not in the starting rotation.
You were a closer.
I don't know about that. I mostly spent my time playing AA ball, but was given a few stints in the major leagues. But yes, so I'm usually running a recorder all the time.
You're what?
Running a recorder all the time.
Running a recorder.
So I actually had a physical recorder. I wish I had it here. It's like a super old school thing. But like now you just have on your phone. You can run so you can run a recorder on your phone the whole time.
Got it.
But I also have a notepad where I'm taking notes. Because again, going back to that idea of like getting to peek into someone's world, if I were profiling you right now, we're talking, I'm recording it all. But then it's also like if we're in your house, it's like what does Colby have in his house? Like what is he wearing? Like everything. I feel like it sounds so manipulative when I'm saying like this, but like everything about that person is an expression of who they are. And what you're trying to do is figure out who they are and convey that to people. And so so there's you talking, but there's also like, what do you look like when you're talking? How are you like, he raised an eyebrow there. Like, what's he wearing? What's in his house? What's happening? So it's it's amazing because people talk about being in flow.
Right.
And like, this is you have to be present. You're trying to like sustain a conversation while also being like, what's on their bookshelf over there while trying to note like what they're doing, what their mannerisms are. And so it's pretty intense.
What's your view on eye? Like I can't like this right here.
Yeah.
I'm actively thinking that we're making eye contact and I can't stop thinking that we're making eye contact like this. I can't imagine that's people's natural state. Do you find that when you're talking to someone face to face in an interview, it's actually helpful to not look at them? Or to like make sustain, like I'm interested in you, like I care about you, and I'm expressing it through my eyeballs.
That's a good question. I mean, I'm definitely interested in them, and I want to have a genuine conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making eye contact. I think a lot of the time, I mean, I do this when I talk, but I like look away, you know?
Right.
And some like they'll do that sometimes, and then when they're doing that, you can kind of like observe, you know? And
so we'll zoom in on his eyelashes. This helps here. Interesting.
So yeah, it's a good mix. But I learned very early when I was from my mentor, that guy, Wright Thompson, who's like one of the greatest sports writers, one of the greatest writers, in my opinion. He wrote an incredible write around of Tiger Woods. He told me, like, write everything down. He's like, just take as many notes as you possibly can. Like, it's better to have more than you need.
And doesn't that break the flow, though, of a conversation? Like, if I'm talking to someone, yes, and they, yes, it's like a therapist.
So I'm not really usually taking notes as we're talking, but I am, like, if you're walking me through your house, I might be taking got notes. It. And then, like, there are always little breaks. Like, I got to go to the bathroom. You got to go to the bathroom. Just, like, jotting down.
Interesting.
Which is, like, that's all kosher. Yeah. Like, that's all about board. They know that. Sometimes I'm even like, yo, I'm going to take. Because people would now get weird. Like, it does make people uncomfortable. If you pull out a pad and you're like.
Totally. Because then they're wondering what the hell you're writing.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes, like, I'm just taking notes. Sometimes I'll say even, like, I want to recreate the scene to, like, really bring the reader in. So,
well, what about thinking about, odds are, if you're going into their world is constructed in a certain way. Oh, this Picasso book, I can't believe you noticed that. Like, of course, like, yeah, it's there for a reason. You want to feel cultured, or you came in.
Wow.
And
what do you have in your apartment? You want people to be like, oh,
what,
yes,
do I have?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've been told we have way too many, Marissa and I have way too many pictures of ourselves. People notice, like, why do you have so many pictures of you two? And I'm like, I don't know. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I didn't put them all there. She put them mostly there, but. Yeah, I don't know. That's
obviously I didn't put them up there.
Marital conflict. But then you go into their world. Maybe there's what you do, and maybe there's, like, go through what some of the bad journalists do, like the gotcha journalists.
Yeah.
Are you trying to get a Twitter friendly, a headlinable reaction, a TMZ, yeah, like, gotcha, you came out. You didn't mean to, like, I know, but it feels like, there's the reputation of journalists sometimes as being untrustworthy.
Yes.
And they're trying to get you to say something that isn't in your best interest.
Yes.
How do you think about balancing readability, virality, and then just a good story?
It's a really good question. And it's like an imperfect calculus. And I always struggled with it. And I'm like a little too, I kind of hate the way headlines operate. So I became a little too avoidant of engaging in some, like, controversial topics. It's, again, so difficult. I think you want to break news, right? But you don't want to, you never want to break news in a way that's like, I didn't ever want to ask a gotcha question that felt cheap. Like, I think if I was going to ask somebody something that was controversial and that might make news, like, to make it concrete, like, if you were going to interviewed Patrick Mahomes, and I didn't ask him this, but, like, if you know, a lot of people might go into that and be like, let's ask him about having a gay teammate. Mm-hmm. Like, that could make some news. And I think if you're just going into that being like,
there's a chance it could make news if he says something that isn't politically correct.
Exactly.
So let's go
exactly,
for it.
Exactly. Exactly. If you go in with that attitude, that always felt like kind of gross to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a responsibility to the person you're interviewing to make clear to them why you're asking that question. So I would need to be like, hey, this has been in the news lately, and I'm just making this on the spot, so I don't think it's quite airtight, but it's like, this has been in the news recently. You know, you are a person that people look like, you are one of the leaders. You're the reigning MVP, the reigning quarterback, the Super Bowl champions. I think you're a league leader. Like, what would you, if you had a gay teammate and someone in your, you know, in the locker room had a problem with that, how would you talk to the team about that or something? Like, that's, and then being like, I think it's important to ask this question because I think people are looking to you to know how to handle what could be a real situation in the NFL in the near future. Like, again, that was all off the cuff. I don't know if that's exactly airtight, but that's different than being like, hey, man, you want to say something maybe slightly politically incorrect about having a gay teammate so that we can blow that up on Twitter? Like, I'd always, like, I didn't like that, and that always bothered me because a lot of people do that, and it's, like, lazy, it's cheap, and then it's not fair to them, and it also makes, like, my job harder now because it's, like, people are not going to want to talk to journalists.
Right. You're almost, like, burning a source.
Yeah. So, to stick with the Patrick Mahomes example, though, like, it is also on me to, like, break some news. Like, there should be, going back to what we talked about earlier, like, after I spend time with him, there should be something in the story that's different that people haven't read before, right?
That's good and for him too, right? He
exactly,
doesn't want to be in a boring story.
Yeah. And so like he told me a great story when I interviewed him after they won their first Super Bowl about him and Travis Kelce that are like a little later on their post-Super Bowl championship tour, mm-hmm. they played beer pong with Post Malone. And like that was a great story and it broke news and like that did get headlines, but like that got headlines for an authentic reason, which is here's just a fun story of Mahomes and Travis Kelce playing beer pong with Post Malone. And it wasn't, that is sort of to me is like the dream scenario, mm-hmm. just in terms of you broke some news and it wasn't like gotcha, it was authentic and it was like you got a nugget that was interesting to people. And it wasn't through some sort of like, hey, what are all the hot button issues we can touch on so that we can make a tweet out of it?
When you go in, what is the research you're doing? Are there questions you know you want to ask? And then once you get there, how scripted is it? Or is it let it flow? And then I know I have to trust there will be something. Kind of like here.
Yeah.
We'll just riff and hope to God something is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, how do you think about that balance?
Minimum for me is you have to read everything that's ever been written on that person.
And recorded?
No, that's a little different. I mean, you use your judgment a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So like sticking with Patrick Mahomes, like I don't need to watch every post game interview he's ever done, right?
Because
you're probably not a ton of substance there.
Right.
But you should try to, and we had a lot of help because we had great resources at Condé Nast, parent company of GQ. We had a library. Shout out Condé Nast. And we had a library and they could build a clip file for us.
There's a new AI service that does that, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I try to watch most, if they're significant podcast interviews, you know, if they've gone on sports talk radio, like, and it's been like a substantive interview, I try to do that. I create a Google Doc. So I'm just like copying and pasting things that I find interesting into a Google Doc, just like everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go through the Google Doc, read everything, take notes, try to think about, okay, what's different about this person now? Like, what's the narrative? Sticking again with Patrick Mahomes, it's like he just won a second Super Bowl. We're going into a new season. What are the questions? And then I build buckets. So I'm like, I write down pages of questions, maybe 5 or 6 pages, which you're never going to get through. That's like, what's this? We're 33 minutes in. You maybe asked me like 4 questions, right?
Feels like 3 hours.
Yeah. And I write down all the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through, I read everything, I watch everything, I take notes, I'm writing questions, go through. Then I sort of organize all the questions and I try to put them in buckets and be like, and like one of those buckets is like bio. Like you want the person to walk you through significant moments in their past. So that's like one big bucket. What are you going to ask them about their background, their bio that hasn't been covered already? Then one bucket could be like, I don't know, preparation or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so I usually am thinking in buckets and I know I have certain questions I want to ask, but it's usually for me, like I have big themes I need to hit on. And then I just go in and I just sort of riff. Like I've written the questions, they're in my head. I've decided what themes I want to do. I sort of have an arc for how I want it to go.
Right.
But then you're just having a conversation. And
so those buckets are by no means chronological for that conversation. You might get to bucket one in the beginning, the middle, and the end.
Yes, exactly.
Just because it naturally happens that way.
Yeah. And you kind of have to, like, for me, I just kind of had, like, I think for a while at the beginning, I was precious of, like, not looking at my notes. And then I was like, that's dumb. As I got older, I was like, just look at your notes.
Every waiter that you hate.
Yeah, exactly.
Just messes up. Because
you don't want to break the conversation, though. You do want it to be authentic. And so sometimes I would look at them and see, like, did I get everything? But you kind of have to keep a scorecard in your head. Does it feel like I asked enough questions about that? And then also, like, what do I want to ask about? What am I curious about? What narrative am I trying to build? Or what theory do I have about this person that I'm trying to test to run by them, you know?
Going back to someone wasn't equipped, didn't have the experience, didn't have the talent level to do that interview.
Yeah.
What would that interview have looked like? Clay Skipper, fresh out of college, trying to find out who he is, maybe starting to write, how would you have botched or not done that interview as well? You just couldn't, you couldn't keep the scorecard in your head as well. You wouldn't have come up with as good questions. You would have done less research. What's the progression from who you were when you started to that interview then?
Well, let me first say that I don't actually think there's like necessarily some unique skill set.
to having a conversation. It's like just doing this. It's just being curious. So I want to be clear that like I don't necessarily think that it's not like basketball where you can necessarily like have to be, you know, you have to be really good at certain skills. I do think it's hard to be good, I guess, but I do think a lot of it's just being a curious human. That's why I read everything. You don't want to go in an interview and ask them a question they've already been asked before. Or you don't want to ask them to hash out something that they've already, that they've talked about 10 times. Because then it just makes, especially with athletes, like they're such a like people of preparation. Like they care so much about preparing that that's like a sign of respect to them. Like if you, like imagine if you're their teammate, like if you're Aaron Rodgers' teammate and you don't prepare, he's going to be like, the fuck is wrong with you, man? I'm in here every day like watching film. And so as a journalist, like you know they care about preparations. Like you should be prepared. So that's like number one. That's why I read everything. And it's just like a sign of respect. Like if they're going to give you their time is valuable, then you should go in there being like not wasting any of it, rehashing something they've already put out there. So that's one thing I would say.
Which many people do not do the work.
Yes. Yeah. But then again, nowadays, like there are a lot of like maybe you can over like a lot of why people like Rogan, I think, is he's like, so what's up? What do you do?
He's like, someone told me your book was good, and I'm going to make you tell me the book,
exactly.
And I'm not going to read it.
And I, you know, and that is, there is a value to that.
Uh-huh.
Because
that's what I did here. I did absolutely no research.
except not find me on LinkedIn.
I tried to find you on LinkedIn, couldn't find you, stopped researching.
I think a lot of the rest of it is just getting comfortable. Like, so much about, I found that, like, interviewing people.
Mm-hmm.
Is about getting over your own insecurity. Because, like, if you...
Insecure about what?
How am I coming off? How's this how is this person...
Am I doing good? Yeah.
Like, that gets in the way of just being there for the conversation. Like, it's all listening, honestly. Because it's, like... And that's why I don't stick to a script in an interview, necessarily. It's because, like, you want to feel like it's an organic conversation. The way you're... Mm-hmm. When we have our walks on the river... Which we do. It's not like I'm not being like, all right, today with Colby, I need to cover.
Yeah.
You know.
I always
how
have,
dates.
I,
of, yeah.
I always
a
have
checklist,
an angle.
Right?
I like, have an angle every time.
It's just like you're just hanging, and so it's really just being present, listening. I think maybe with some experience, you get a better sense of what people respond to and what they don't.
Mm-hmm. What about pulling on threads? Do you feel that is a skill? Someone says something.
Yes.
And I feel like there's something there.
Yes. A lot of it, that's like, it's a little bit of also being a bit of a psychologist and being like, they like did something weird with their body when they answered that question. Like, there's more there. A great metaphor someone gave me once, Zach Barron, who's like, he's a senior staff, the staff writer at GQ. I don't know. He's like an unbelievable writer. He's been at GQ forever, has written a whole host of incredible stories. He once told me that an interview is like, you're just walking the subject up to a bunch of doors. And you're being like, you want to go in the store? And if they're like, and that is what you're doing in the interview. Because like, and maybe you're like, this is going to be a great, they want to go to this door. Like, let's talk about this. And they like,
I already opened that door.
Yeah, and they like, don't want to talk about that. Then you have to this is the calculus you're doing in your head. You have to pretty quickly be like, all right, well, that door's not good. Let's go to the next door.
Gotcha.
And then when they walk through a door, now it's like, all right, boom, we're in here. Like, let's, and that's what you're always doing. You're like, well, we've been in this door for 40 minutes. Do I have enough? Should we move on?
Right.
And so it's just kind of always doing that calculus.
All right. So you've been talking with someone for 4 hours. You walk out of that room.
I don't think I interviewed someone for 4 hours.
Okay.
But hypothetically.
You're walking out. Are you done talking with them?
What do you mean?
No, like, are you, is 99% of the time, whatever you got there is what you got?
I mean, it depends. Like, if you had two-hour sessions and it's your second session, then yeah. I mean, depending on how it went, if you had a good rapport, they liked you, like, they're amenable to...
Hey, I got a few follow-up questions.
Totally.
They'll do that.
It totally depends on the person. They might be like, no, I gave you my time.
Yeah.
And they'd be totally... That's like, they did. But they might be like, sure, I'll give you... Or something could happen. They could get injured. And now it's like... Well, we can't really do the story without commenting on this. Can we get 15 more minutes on the phone?
Got it. Okay, so you get, let's say you're done with all your material. What do you do next?
Panic.
First of all, speaking of panic, how long do you usually have to write that story?
That totally depends. Like, I would say, like, when I was writing feature stories for the magazine, it wasn't very long. Maybe like two
Well, it totally depends.
Let's say it's crunch time. Let's say it's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You walk out of there.
I spend 13 days being like, doing everything I can to not write. Washing dishes, throwing a tennis ball against the wall, pulling my hair out, showering four times.
Drinking heavily.
Going on a run. Yep. A lot of beers. And then day 13, it's like, all right, let's roll up the sleeves and see what comes out. No, it's not.
When does your editor need it? If it's due in 2 weeks, when does your editor need to look at the first draft?
Here's how it works. This is why I think, my opinion, I'm a little biased, but like why stories at GQ are so good is because how it works is I write the story. Mm-hmm. I send it to my editor. My editor then reads the story, gives it back to me mm-hmm. with notes. I write a second draft, goes back to the editor. The editor then, depending on how much time there is, could give it back to me again, probably not, sends it to a top editor. Mm-hmm. The top editor makes notes, sends it back to the editor. Editor looks at those notes, sends it back to me. I write a third draft, send it again to the editor and Jesus. The top editor. Then it goes to the editor in chief. He makes notes. If the notes are minor, the top editor and the editor can just do the notes from the editor in chief. And like that's a big secret.
What do you mean do the notes? Like they will rewrite things?
Yeah. Which is, as I was to say, is a big secret is like some of my, like all great writers have great editors. Some of my best writing was written by my editors. And so editors are like saints and angels and don't get enough credit because they are doing, especially if it's crunch time, they don't have time to send it back to you, especially because writers are like, oh, I need to go to the top of the mountain and like find inspiration to answer this one note that's like, hey, I think we should use a different word here, right? Uh-huh. And editors are just like, we just can't, like, that we just need to
get this. Well, it's easier to edit than it is to write. So theoretically, they could look at it and be like, I got a freaking gem. And I'm just gonna drop it into Clay, and he's gonna thank me later.
Yeah, I don't know if it's easier to edit than write, but
what?
Well, I mean, I guess yeah,
different skills. I think writing's harder.
But editors write a lot. At least for me, I had a lot of incredible editors, and they made all my work way better and wrote a lot of my great sentences.
Are you networking right now?
Yeah, yeah, Jeff, you're out there. Drop me a line.
Check out my LinkedIn.
Yeah, don't check out my LinkedIn. You won't find it if you search Clay Skipper. So anyway, you were asking how long it takes.
You write it. You give it to your editor. What kind of comments? What are the range of comments they could give?
Could be anything from the first editor could be what we call line edits. That's something like just changing passive voice to active voice. That would be like the most minor of mm-hmm. or like use a different word here. But it's also could be structural. It could be like what question are we posing in this section and how are we answering it? It could be wholesale, like move this from the first section to the fourth section. It could be, hey, we don't really see this person or hear from this person who's like the profile of the subject until, you know, 700 words in, like we need to fix that. It's all a whole host of notes, really.
Are you've got all the material and your first draft, are you thinking about creating a narrative? Like, how do you take the raw material? What's your go-to strategy for like, what's the story? What's the arc? How does this actually read? Let's start out with a funny anecdote. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you think about that?
So another piece of great advice I got, that someone once told me, Pablo Torre, who's a longtime ESPN writer, he once was like, you should just, like, he's like, whenever I'm going to write a story, I take whatever's the bit I go back and tell my friends.
Got it.
Like that's usually used for what we call the lead, which mm-hmm. is like the lead is the beginning of the story. And so I usually take that. I'm like, when I go back and I've spent a weekend interviewing somebody and I see you and I'm like telling you about it, like what's the thing that stands out to me? Mm-hmm. And I usually start with that story, but then I need to figure out, can I connect that to the big question I'm asking about that person?
So what's an example of a big question?
Okay. So I went and interviewed Kirk Cousins a while ago, who's mm-hmm. now the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. But I was interviewing him when he was about to be franchise tagged by the Washington Redskins. The question about Kirk was like, he had had a couple of good years at quarterback. What basically Washington was trying to decide, is he our franchise quarterback? Mm-hmm. And the thing people always talked about with Kirk was like, he didn't necessarily pass like the sniff test for a quarterback. Like your quarterback is like, you kind of want him like Tom Brady or like Patrick Mahomes or like Lamar Jackson. Like he's like the leader. He was a little nerdy.
Got it.
I wouldn't even say nerdy, but he was just a little like, he didn't quite have the like.
Wasn't the alpha male quarterback prototype.
Yeah. And so the day I went to meet him, I found him. He was at his parents' house, like working out in his parents' basement. Like, and his mom came in and was like, honey, like, how long are you going to be down here? Like, I need to like do my workout. And it was just such a perfect encapsulation. Like, this dude is about to be paid $50 million. He is like one of the, arguably one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. And he's down here like sharing the Bowflex. It wasn't a Bowflex, but like sharing a Bowflex with his mom. Like, and so it's just like, this is a perfect, like, that's a funny story. I would come back and tell my friends that, but also encapsulates the whole question, which is like, is this guy the franchise quarterback?
Is he the guy?
Is he the guy? And so you use that story to segue into like, this is why I'm interviewing him. He's at a moment in his career where it's like, he's either going to become the franchise quarterback or not. And this is the question. And now we're going to try to figure it out over the next three sessions.
Now,
he's great, by the way. Big fan of his.
Thinking back on your career.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 33. We can write memoirs, right? We're allowed to do that.
Colby is trying. This is all to promote Colby's memoir in case you.
God, that's getting cut so quickly.
I have it right here. It's called How to Lose It All in L.A. by Colby Howard.
I'm actually getting interviewed by Clay.
This is somewhat greedy. What are you reading right now? George Saunders.
Is that fiction or nonfiction?
Is this the writer? Fiction. The right he teaches.
I interviewed him. You could go to GQ.com / Clay Skipper and find it.
I want nothing but the best. Thinking back, what sucks about just being a writer at GQ or just being in the business you're in? What sucks that people wouldn't think about? Like every job has the job part and you're like, God damn it, I have to do this.
Well, for me, it was like, I just hated, it's nothing specific to GQ, it's more about me, but like, I just hated promoting. Like I hate promoting it. Like I always wanted to be, and maybe it's a little old school man, old man yelling at a cloud, high horsey, but I just always wanted to like, if you liked the work, I wanted it to be because the work was good and you liked reading it, not because like I came up with a good tweet.
Yeah.
And also I just hated it. Like there's so much noise out there and I just didn't want to add noise that, I just didn't want to make noise to make noise. And so I was never good at the promotional aspect. Like, and I probably blew an opportunity to like build a Twitter following, build an Instagram following. And a lot of that's because my own hangups about social media. But I did not like that part and always sort of felt like work to me. Like, all right, now I got to like come up with a cool tweet. Like, I just didn't like that.
Is I mean, that's infected.
I also like to point out that I'm talking about how much noise there is in the world as we are. As you are making another goddamn
so
podcast.
Much noise. Are people doing podcasts?
Oh, my God.
People say it's a great way to promote your brand.
Yes. This would be a good time to talk about MailChimp. Do you?
ZipRecruiter.com. Find your next job.
Athletic Greens. Now AG1. Helps you take a shit every morning.
If I get another Are You Not Pooping Well YouTube ad,
yeah,
it's insane. What was I going to ask you?
Was it about my morning?
It was about your bowels.
Morning BMs.
Mud water.
Liquid death.
Liquid death. So.
Wait, hang on. I have to address something. I listen to Dax Shepard's podcast a lot, and he's been recently doing McDonald's ads. And he says that one in every 8 Americans has worked in McDonald's.
Why are you yelling at me?
That seems remarkable.
That seems made up. I don't know how they calculated that.
I mean, you're in finance. You could do it better than I could.
Well, 1 in 8 Americans, 1 in 8 adults.
Look, man, I'm just telling you what Dax said.
Talk about someone who loves talking about pooping and wiping. Anyway, what about the thing that you love? Like, if someone wants to do this job and they heard the shitty part about it, which wasn't all that shitty, you just like to promote.
There weren't a lot of shitty parts about it, to be honest.
Okay, well, that's a promotion in itself. Like, the floor is high.
Yes. There weren't a lot of shitty parts. I loved it. I mean, one, I'm someone who's like super interested in psychology and how people tick. Mm-hmm. So getting to spend, like, I got unbelievable access because of GQ, because of the brand, because of how well respected they are. I got access to like so many incredible people and got to sit across from them and like have conversations like this. Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. Like, that just felt very rare and special and unique. And that was something I was very grateful for and still am. That part's awesome. And then also the people you work with. Like, again, going back to what I said about I always felt like having the sort of protective ecosystem of working with great editors, like, made my floor pretty high. Like, you're just getting to work with, like, incredible people, and you're talking about, like, idea. Like, when you're writing a story, you have to have an animating idea. So you're sitting across from this really smart person, and you're being like, what is the idea here? And you're just, like, shooting the shit and trying to come up with, like, theories and philosophies and ideas. I don't know. It's just, like, cool.
I mean,
it's like, feels like college in that sense almost.
Except you're working with a... I mean, your whole life is about narrowing down to people you want to hang out with and hopefully are smarter and smarter and smarter. So, like, working with smart people is a blast.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing. Like, GQ, someone, you know, there's, like, that advice. It's, like, you never want to be smartest person in the room.
Right.
And I definitely felt like the dumbest person in the room basically the whole time I was working there, which is great.
And in this room. Yeah,
that's good. It's true. But I also feel dumb all the time. So, I am dumb. I don't know why you're listening to this, because I am an idiot. But what's ironic...
Start wrapping this up.
Oh, wow.
We're at time, right? Time flies. If you wanted to get it, like, taking away the fact that traditional media is crumbling, maybe they'll figure out.
That's
maybe
another bad part of
the job. Yeah, exactly. You'll probably get fired. The person they would want to hire right now, who is 23 or 24 and graduated college, is most likely someone who has made themselves a known quantity in some way through self-promotion of articles, or like, how do you think they're finding a 23-year-old up-and-coming writer, if indeed they are still looking for that? Like, what isn't the promotion part in this day and age, like, part and parcel of
totally.
You being successful?
I would say my take on the promotion is the wrong take. Uh-huh. I just want to be clear about that. But I don't know if they're finding, I mean, I started as an editorial assistant, which is a position that doesn't exist anymore. That was basically when the magazine had its own staff and the .com had their own staff. And I was hired to be an assistant to the editors on the magazine, meaning like I did their expenses. Magazine staffs have been so thinned out that there's no longer magazine editors and .com editors. There's just like the editorial staff. And there don't really exist editorial assistants anymore at all. I think, I don't totally know, but I think like when they're looking for writers, they're probably finding people, who have already written for, who have used social media to... or Substack or something like that to start their own following.
They've proven in some way.
Yeah.
Kind of like an actor. If you're undiscovered, create a freaking YouTube series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's something.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I forget who I heard this from, maybe Bill Simmons, but it's like people would always reach out to Bill Simmons and be like, I really want to be a writer. And he would be like, what have you written?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, well, no, I haven't written. I'm trying to become a writer.
Didn't I just tell you?
You need to hire me to be a writer before I can write.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, it goes back all the way to the beginning to bring it full circle, like the LinkedIn thing. Like, your writing is the best evidence of how good of a writer you are.
Right, right.
Like, better than any resume. So.
God, this is why you get good guests. Bring it full circle.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Thank you.
This has been Clay Skipper on Colby Howard Wants Your Job. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.